It's 8:15 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville starting at 4 o'clock. In the studio with a preview of that meeting agenda is County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
So not a lot of big topics, mostly appointments and some business with Mountain Regional Water. Of course, we've got the East Code as well. But let's start with Mountain Regional's capital budget.
They're sure.
Shifting some money around, spending after having spent $500,000 on meter replacement, so those were worn out or were tracking?
Well, I think it's a constant program that they have that's either to upgrade meters or install meters where they don't exist at the current time. So, that's a constant process that's going on to improve the water system. They're going to shift some money around to actually do a little bit more of that than they expected this year.
Okay. An amendment on the Silver Creek Sewer Assessment District, you're adding three more lots to be assessed. That's, I guess, good news, huh?
Yes, very good news. That brings us up to 22. Somewhere between 24 and 25 is our break-even point so that we can extinguish that balloon payment that was part of the original bond. We're very confident that over the 20-year period that we'll be able to get there.
Yeah. What changed their minds, or was it?
Well, I think a lot of things. I think there seems to be some tendency whenever we do these large projects that people don't necessarily believe that we're actually going to do them. So now that we're in the ground and actually moving dirt to get those pipelines in, I think people see that it's actually happening, and that sometimes changes some minds.
Okay. So again, you need at least three to avoid that 20-year
Between two and three. So it's just a financial calculation there. So we feel over that 20-year period, since we've already gotten three more, and we know how many properties are still left out there, which are quite a few commercial properties, that those will eventually come in.
Okay, certainly the major topic tomorrow, another public hearing on Chapter 3 of the East County Code, which looks at zoning districts and the zoning map. So with possibly tens of thousands of new units to be built, what are we talking about in terms of wells and septic tanks here?
Well, the council, is certainly concerned about, it seems like three large areas that come into play, which is what did the Planning Commission consider in concerning water quality, water quantity, and then the transportation infrastructure related to the possible density that would come with the changes that were proposed. I think the council is going to take a look at that. They've already asked staff to start preparing some reading material as well as some map overlays in order to look at some of the studies that have been done around those areas. And there's a lot of different ways they can deal with that as things go forward.
Ways to deal with it, meaning enforcing that we actually have some sewer.
Yeah,
service?
from the standpoint of first of all, what are the thresholds out there in those three areas of water quality, water quantity, and transportation? And do we want to? Does the council want to look at what was proposed and give some better direction back to the Planning Commission in order to make some further recommendations? Or do they want to simply deal with those things within the code themselves?
So when we talk of tens of thousands, I mean, I think the estimate was anywhere between 21 and 45,000.
Well, and you have to remember that was based on and Pat was very clear in the last meeting about what that was based on, which was kind of the what's the absolute maximum that could happen out there, based on the differences in the zoning that was proposed by the Planning Commission. Now, that didn't take into consideration ridgeline. It didn't take into consideration steep slopes, sensitive lands, anything like that. So that number, that 43,000 number, is probably extremely high on the high side. However, it does give a magnitude. And so I think that's what the council and the public are dealing with as they look at this.
All right. The staff report said at the last meeting the council had asked for three items: an East County Transportation Master Plan, details on the UDOT roadway projects in the east, and again, information on the water quality and resources study. So is all of that information ready for tomorrow's meeting?
I'm not sure that it'll be ready for tomorrow. I think the main focus is to, again, open up the process to the public with a public hearing so that the council can get some feedback. It's been several months since they've gotten feedback on this. The council discussed the topic of Chapter 3 for about 2 hours last week without public input. So I think they're looking for that. And then, you know, the council needs to make a decision on kind of the deliberative process that they want to go through. And give some initial direction to staff on that deliberative process. They've started to do that. I think that'll be refined tomorrow night.
All right. As I mentioned, it is a public hearing. How many more meetings do you anticipate it? I mean, we're talking a few more weeks or months here?
Well, again, going back to the process on Chapter 4, I totally underestimated it and guessed low. So I'm you're not going to pin me down on a number of meetings on that, but it's going to be several, I believe.
All right. That's pretty much it for the meeting, unless you wanted to mention something else.
Well, I've got a couple of things. You know, I received my solid waste services bill this last weekend and got online and paid it. And it was very easy to do online, and I encourage people to do that as they receive that 2017 bill. Another mention that have had a lot of changes in our transportation system over the last few weeks between a Camas route, the Electric Express on 224, the e-bikes that started last week, and that program is so far very popular. And then I think this week we'll see the beginning of the Kimball Junction Circulator starting out in the Kimball Junction interchange area.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about that e-bike.
Sure.
E-bike rollout. Of course, we made a big deal about how to get out of your car and onto one of these e-bikes. And we, of course, have heard horror stories. Just like anything else, I tend to hear the complaints rather than the compliments.
Absolutely.
Have we worked out the bugs? Because
So we've been at this less than a week so far. The company does have the company Bewegan does have experience with this elsewhere. We did expect some bugs, and I think we've seen those. Whether that has to do with the app that people are using to access the bikes, the kiosks themselves, and then even some trouble with the bikes themselves when they've gotten them out. I think it's a learning process around these, and we're taking in all of that information. You're exactly right that we tend to hear more about the problems than we do the successes. I've been out on them two or three times already with my wife, and we've not had any issues. But I think we're more in the know on how to make these work. So it's just a constant process of improving our service.
Yeah, so if somebody does run into a problem with the bike, I mean, what do they do? Who do they call?
So if they have the app, the phone number is available on the app, or they can go to summitbikeshare.com, and there's a phone number there that will get them immediately in contact with the company that's helping to run these, and on the kiosks themselves, and I believe the bikes themselves have a phone number on them as well. So there's plenty of opportunity to take care of those. And the bottom line is if you're having a trouble with the bike while you're out, lock it up somewhere, jump on the bus and go back to where you need to go. And the company will take care of it from there.
Okay. So you need to carry a lock with you?
No, they have locks on them. You can actually lock them to themselves or around something. And the lock is in the basket in the front.
Yeah. Any talk of maybe just having some ambassadors out there at the stations to kind of walk people through it?
Or? I have not heard that from our staff this week, but I do know that they did have some folks out on Thursday and Friday of last week to help some folks out, and are very willing to take phone calls as well.
All right. Well, what I've noticed is I ride a lot on the bike paths, and I had two of them, both a couple, not wearing a helmet, flying up the hill around some blind corners. And, you know, I mean, I'm careful because I know the trail well enough that I know where I need to slow down. But in my lane, I mean, it was quite frightening, actually. It could have been a serious collision.
Yeah, I think there's probably going to need to be some education out there about, just simple courtesy and safety around bike use on our trails. If we're going to be encouraging more folks, especially perhaps folks from outside the area that aren't used to our trails, we've got to do a better job of making sure that they're ready for that.
Yeah, and I kind of just made me question the liability here. I mean, is the county on the line for somebody using one of these bikes, not wearing a helmet, something
well,
happens to them?
You know, part of when you sign up to take a bike, you sign away liability on that, or you assume the liability for that. So those that it's like driving a car. When you step in that car, you're liable. So when you step on that bike and pay for that service, you're liable for your actions on it.
Okay. Anything else?
That's all I've got today.
Okay, Tom, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, the Park City Planning Commission meeting tomorrow starting at 5:30 p.m. in the City Council Chambers of the MARSEC building in the studio to preview the agenda. Bruce Erickson, Planning Director, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First up is in work session some noise ordinance amendments. My understanding is that part of this is to bring the city's ordinance into compliance with federal law. So we're talking about federal law acts back in the 70s. Why are we just now getting into compliance?
Well, a couple of reasons, not the least of which is the City Council's interest in code enforcement and making sure that we're enforcing all of our regulations, especially related to noise in the interface between Main Street and Park Avenue and our residential districts. So the Legal Department, Building Department, and Planning Department were charged with going back and making sure that we understand what's in the noise ordinance, what does it say, what does it mean, is it constitutional, and can we defend it if we take an action? And so the legal department, especially Tricia Lake and Michelle Downard from Building, have gone through and parsed this thing. It's kind of fun to read about the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution and the 14th Amendment to the Constitution and constitutional rights. But what it comes down to is the actual thresholds for noise aren't really changing, but the definitions are much more technical. Building is getting two new noise meters. Law enforcement will get two new noise meters. And then we're going to collaboratively go out and walk the streets a little bit and see how the meters work.
So we're doing this then to make sure that we can enforce the
absolutely,
noise?
Absolutely. I mean, the police department gets complaints almost weekly from Main Street noise. And we have conditions of approval that the Planning Commission has put on that are difficult to enforce as well. And so we needed to get the noise ordinance up to speed so that we could enforce. And if we do take a regulatory action, we can actually win in court.
All right. And I just came across this annoyances survey that was done by for Airbnb. And the number one complaint about Airbnb is noise, with more than a third of the people saying that's the top issue facing Airbnb hosts and neighbors. So are we doing this as part, knowing that this is an issue, that maybe it's something we need to look at?
Well, I'm not sure I knew that specific article, but yeah, we hear from neighbors all the time. I think you heard it from the City Council last week that they're very concerned about the expansion of nightly rentals in the historic districts because we are getting more and more infill and we're getting more and more dense. This whole the whole growth of rooftop decks and flat roofs from my predecessor has exacerbated the situation. So this is going to give us an opportunity to protect our historic district as well.
Okay. Moving on to the King's Crown Master Plan development. This is property that we're talking about right next to Treasure, I guess, and Park City Mountain Resort there off
right,
of King's
Crown.
Right.
It's the west side of Lowell Avenue between the Marriott and North Star Subdivision, and part of it extends almost up to the top of Treasure Hill. This is an old parcel that was subdivided with the Park City Survey. And all the streets were vacated back in the 1970s, but the lots were never vacated. It's been under development review for years and years and years. I can recall John Carbine bringing forward a hotel on the site for the Bamberger family back in the day. It also incorporates a portion of the King's Crown ski run. That's not part of this particular proposal, but the property is about 15 acres. They're proposing a number of units up there, but theoretically there are 299 lots from the Park City Survey up there that don't have any access and are not necessarily lots of record. So, we're having to re-subdivide it rather than create a new subdivision to make the old lots go away and bring in the new project proposal. There is a chunk of affordable housing in here that'll tuck up right next to the Marriott. Importantly, Francisco Astorga is also managing this project so that all of the traffic studies that have been going on Lowell, including the City Transportation Master Plan, the Treasure, Transportation Plan and the Bamberger Transportation Plan have all been rolled into one. So when you're looking at either the Treasure Plan or the Bamberger Plan, you're seeing both projects combined in the traffic impacts.
So what are we talking about, though? Do we have a total number of units? We're talking some single-family and
multi? We do. It's 27 single-family lots, 25 condos, 7 townhouses, and 18 affordable housing units. So I didn't sum those off the top of my head, but, yeah, it's on the order of 50.
Okay. So, I mean, if you add all of those up, I mean, those would – you're saying that because they're not lots of record, they don't have vested rights for for almost 300 single-family homes?
That's roughly correct, but they do have the zone density, partially in the ROS zone, and some of those lots are in the ROS zone, so they have nothing. The rest of them are in the resort commercial zone, which is the same as the resort, and there's a floor area ratio and a very technical complication, but right now the application is for much less than what the total density would be, on the order of half. And the whole top of the mountain or the whole top of the project will remain in open space.
Still, we're talking about a bunch of units. And when we start talking about traffic, is this going to be put under the same scrutiny as Treasure has?
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons Planner Astorga has been assigned this. He's the program manager for Treasure. That means he understands Treasure and he understands Bamberger. He also did a lot of the underlying approvals with Planner Whetstone at the resort. So it's much less likely things are going to slip through the crack up there.
All right. Let's move to the Land Management Code amendments. This is with regard to the storefront enhancement program. Staff's been working on this for a while. We're basically talking about limiting storefronts to 50 feet?
That was the previous one. The current one is set up to regulate conventional chain businesses. But it is part of the storefront enhancement program. So there's 5 components of the storefront enhancement program. The one we did about 3 months ago with Planner Tyler limited the storefront width to 50 feet with some exemptions for historic buildings. And that's the one. The next one that's coming now is a limitation on conventional chain businesses or formula businesses. And this is a very complicated calculation. Planner Tyler and her team have been working on it with economic development, Historic Park City Association, all kinds of input. What we're going to do is we've calculated the number of stores that meet our definition of a conventional chain business, which is 10 stores or more with uniforms and signage and that kind of thing. We currently have 12 of them on Main Street in the Commercial Business District, and we have one of them on the Historic Resort Commercial, which is down by the Marriott, the High West, and Town Lift Project. So we reviewed nationwide all of the ordinances. Once again, this is a constitutional issue. We can't treat companies that go over state lines differently than we can treat our local businesses. Last year, there was a lawsuit down in Springville outside of Zion when they tried to keep a Subway store out of that town. So we're being a little bit cautious here where we've approached it. We've reviewed a number of ordinances. For example, the city of McCall limits the total of conventional chain businesses to no more than 10% in their area of impact. So our current proposal, based on the review by the city council and the HPCA, is to limit to approximately 20%. Or about 80% of our Main Street, or 4 stores in 5 would remain non-conventional chain businesses.
So those limitations are legal?
We believe so, and we believe they're enforceable. We've attacked this thing from every possible angle and got as much public input as we can get. I think, our mission is to retain our Main Street in its current form. It's only applicable to the historic district, which is very important in terms of its ability to be enforced. Conventional chain businesses, we hear once in a while that there are some goods that come out of them. They have marketing dollars. They're very, very good at restoring historic buildings because they're not quite so budget-oriented. So there are some benefits. On the other hand, I think 80 to 85% of our stores need to remain outside conventional chain businesses.
So if this is the second component, you've got 3 more to come?
Actually, there are a total of 5.
Right. So what's to come then?
This is the last one.
Oh, okay. So we've done the 4.
We've done the 4.
Got it. Okay, a number of continuations also planned for tomorrow's meeting, but public hearings will still be held on the first phase of Woodside Park. We're building this is the least dense option that was presented for this property, right?
Right, right. And I think, again, you're seeing the commitment from the Community Development Department and Housing and the City Council that they want to be in compliance with the code. They're not interested in pushing the boundaries at this point. They want to fit into the neighborhood for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is we're not interested in creating a stigma for the project, saying you guys cheated to push this along. And two, we want the folks that are living in the in Woodside Park to feel like they're part of the neighborhood, and we didn't have to, you know, kind of denigrate them to push them into a neighborhood. So it's cultural. It's part of our zoning code. And that's what's happening. Why these are being continued is we need to make a modification to the master plan development section that was a little bit too – it was getting in the way of doing affordable housing. So there was a bottom threshold, and that bottom threshold was set too high, so we're just removing that.
Okay. We're talking about building 12 units. Four of these are single-family homes, 13 parking spots. Do the single-family have garages in?
The one that's on its own lot will. The two historic houses that we're doing are exempt from the parking regulations, so they'll be able to park in this common parking lot, but there won't be garages on Park Avenue. That's one of the nice things about the way community development put this plan together with economic development is there actually reduces the number of driveways on Park Avenue. And so you'll see the historic houses without the driveways getting in the way.
Is that enough?
You know, I'll tell you what, Leslie. I am not a believer that cars are going to go away in 10 years, but there are a lot of folks who are. And so we're going to achieve the best compromise we can.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. That's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Yeah. I hope you can hear me. I'm at the airport.
Okay. Well, we'll keep it quick here. Shows are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 8 o'clock. Tell us what to expect.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do my, obviously, Supreme song, and it's a show full of music and comedy and gorgeous gowns and all of that stuff. Sometimes if the audience is really cool, some of the ladies will come on stage and join me. So that's always something to look forward to.
Yeah, so are you performing solo or will you have some backup singers?
Oh, I have a whole band. I have a band and singers, yes.
Okay. How many shows do you continue to do each year?
You know, people always ask how many shows. I'm never great at math. I mean, I tour all the time. I just got back from London, England. I did a command performance over there for some of the royal family. I worked at in Liverpool at the Cavern Club, you know, the Beatles starting point. And, you know, I travel all over America, obviously. So I'm just always out there.
Yeah. Well, this, of course, isn't your first time to Park City. I know you were here back, of course, a few years ago for the premiere of the film, The Backup Singers. How did that roll out for you?
I was there. What was that for again?
Oh, I thought that was at Sundance, the film, the premiere of the film.
Which film? Which film were you thinking about?
I was thinking you were part of the Backup Singers film.
No, I don't think I was in that. No.
Oh, okay. Well, of course, you made your career as a backup singer. I mean, but how does it feel to be the lead act?
People say that. I never thought of myself as a backup singer. I mean, the Supremes were, to me, we were a group, and I never thought of myself as a backup singer.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So what are you working on now? Do you just continue to do some of the favorite hits?
Oh, honey, I'm so busy out here. In fact, I want your listeners to go to my website, MaryWilson.com, or Mary Wilson, whatever it is. And, you know, because I can't keep up with everything I do. That's why I asked them, what was that for? I'm doing so much. Right now, I'm taking acting classes. I go to L.A. and take acting classes, voiceover classes. You know, I have 10 grandchildren, so I do that a lot. I'm still recording. I have one song, actually, that was on the dance charts last year, number 19. I'm still working on an album I've been working on for about 10 years. I feel like Stevie Wonder. When is that album going to come out? you know, so I do all sorts of things. In fact, there's a couple of legislation that I'm a part of right now. One has to do with, it's called Truth in Music, where there are lots of focus groups that go around pretending that they are the famous groups who made famous records, but they're just kind of, you know, focus. So I'm part of that to bring more awareness to that plight that we musicians have. There's also some legislation regarding downloading and things of that nature for some of the radio stations and the Pandoras and all people like that, because not necessarily Pandoras, but I'm just saying as part of who actually is paying us now, because they play our music. And prior to that, we were not getting paid for when that music is being used. So I'm involved in a lot of different types of things. I have a lot of charities that I'm involved with. A lot of them have to do with young children, you know, which I love. So, you know, I'm just always out there doing something. Because I'm not singing, I'm just doing all sorts of things.
Well, again, as I mentioned, as shown, you don't want to miss three nights only here in Park City at the Egyptian Theater stage. Hey, Mary, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's awfully kind. Thank you so much. I'll see you guys soon.
Okay, ticket prices start at $39 for Thursday's show. You can find out more information and purchase tickets at parkcityshows.com. KPCW News Time now, 8:46. I have District Superintendent Shad Sorensen along with Business Administrator Kip Bigelow. Good morning, guys. Hey, the South Summit Board of Education, is my understanding, scheduled to vote on whether to put the bond on November's election ballot at its meeting August 10th. So that's a firm decision?
That is the firm decision. And the board will review everything at that point and make a final decision.
Okay. How much are we talking about? Have they put a amount on this at this point?
There are discussions. The bond will be slightly over $58 million, which would be about $95 for a 100,000 taxable home value.
Okay.
Per year.
And that's for 15, 20 years?
It's a 20-year bond.
20 years bond? Okay, Kip. The school district conducted an online survey asking for community input on the options that had been presented. Can you talk to me a little bit about those responses?
The community survey happened after we had held two public input meetings and presented the facts and the information and solicited feedback. And as a result of that, over 80% of the respondents felt the direction of building a new high school was in the best direction of the district, which allows us to utilize the other three buildings, splitting the grades pre-K through 8, and then building a new high school that's 9 through 12.
So that $58 million would do what? Buy land and build a new facility?
The district already has reserved money for the land, but it would build a new high school. And depending on construction costs, we're hopeful that it'll take care of some of the renovations that need to happen in the other buildings. We had a master planning process. Mr. Bigelow can talk a little bit more about that. But there are some renovations that need to take place to have those be 21st century learning centers as well.
Do you have the land or do you still need to buy it?
We're in negotiations right now to purchase some land. Camas Valley is an interesting valley. The eastern side of the valley is much higher elevation than the western side, and most of the land is available on the west side of the valley. So we're dealing with some wetland issues that we're working through right now, and so a final decision on the property has not been made, but we are in negotiations with a piece of property. We hope to have that finalized within the next month.
All right, and assuming that this does get approved, how soon would you start on construction?
Next spring.
All right, and you're building a school for how many students, a new high school for how many kids?
It is a school for 750 students, but has the capacity to be built, expanded with additional wings.
Okay. And then in the meantime, I mean, you're just going to have to keep people where they are, because it would take at least a year, I'm guessing, to get built?
Absolutely. Yeah, there have been some questions. Well, what do you do if the bond doesn't pass? And, of course, we would look at, in a short-term situation, some portables, which we already have two. The challenge with portables, we are on a campus of 40 acres for the three schools. We would need, it's recommended that we have 70 acres to for those three schools, and so we're kind of landlocked right now. And if you bring portables, that just decreases play space and open space, which is not a good environment for learning. And so we're at a little bit of a struggle. We would seriously be contemplating year-round schools at that point to help with the overburdening of the buildings.
All right. Again, that's August 10th. Everyone's invited to come give their public input.
It's an open board meeting.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about teacher salaries. Those of that salaries, of course, can't be paid for with capital dollars or a school bond. What kind of pay increase did South Summit School District teachers receive for the coming year as part of negotiations?
The salary schedule for South Summit School District was increased only by 1%. We know there were many districts around the state that were much higher than that. As we looked at revenue coming into the district and worked through that, we settled on a 1%. Teachers were given what we call steps and lanes. So in reality, they received more than the 1% as they moved up that salary schedule. As I've looked at those schedules, even those that you've heard in the Salt Lake Valley that are starting out at $40,000, South Summit is still very competitive with that. We're right about that mark, even with our small 1% increase. With the number of contracted days being different, as I've calculated that back, South Summit still compares very favorably. Obviously, Park City is at the top of the scale. We're not competing with them by any means, but we still feel that we're very competitive.
So is Park City kind of out there on its own? I mean, we saw starting salaries go up to $50,000.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, so, but you're saying you're in the ballpark with a starting salary of about 40?
We are. You know, with that revenue, because of the growth we're experiencing, there were several new positions that needed to be funded. With the vision that we have with the Silver Creek Academy, there were some administrative positions that needed to be funded. And so some of those new positions were funded in addition to just the overall increase on the salary schedule.
Yeah. How difficult is it to find teachers, Chad, willing to make the drive to the South Summit, or are they all living within the valley?
We have been very fortunate this year with the position openings that we have. We had exceptional candidates apply and are very excited with those that we were able to hire. Certainly, we are concerned as we start looking at the competitive nature, and with Park City being 50,000, will people choose to take that and have housing that's closer to where they work in the Salt Lake area and not have to commute up as far? Not all of our faculty and staff do live in the valley. They've all over the place. Some do commute in, and many do live there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about where you are with the Silver Summit Academy. That's scheduled to open this fall, yeah?
It is. The building will not be ready probably until late November or December time frame with the construction that needs to happen. We're excited. We have 92 students that have applied. It's mixed amongst the three different levels, about 33 K through 5 and 28 6 through 8 and 31 9 through 12. And we will begin in the fall. They will have their curriculum available, and we will be providing quality education. But when the building is open with the makerspace and the other facilities that will be available, it will be very exciting.
Right. So what do they do in the meantime? I mean, where do they meet if they can't meet here?
Right now, they'll have some temporary space in the district office, and we have also been looking for some possible space near the academy that we could use. But as it stands today, we would be using the district office.
All right, and this is the academy is the site of the old Honda dealership right there.
Right.
Out in Silver Creek, or Silver Summit, I guess it is. Of these 92 kids, I mean, are they kids who are living in Camas and are willing to make the commute into the Park City area every day?
It's been interesting. It's about 48% are those that are already in the South Summit School District, or 48% are new to the district that are school choosing in and looking for that type of an educational experience. Many of them have been homeschool students that see this as a real viable option for expanding their curriculum and expanding the socialization. But we do have several students in South Summit that have also chosen to pursue taking classes at Silver Summit.
Yeah, so talk to me a little bit about the renovation. What are you doing? Are you building individual classrooms? And is it just a one-story building?
You know, it's really Starbucks meets Google type of a concept. So a lot of collaboration space, a lot of group space. The elementary component will have a complete lockdown from the secondaries for student safety and protection and management. The elementary facility will have three major learning spaces, and then they will also have access to the maker space when they want to go and do projects that expand the curriculum or have some entrepreneurial type of opportunities.
So talk a little bit about the teaching dynamics of this. I mean, again, kindergarten, first, second grade kids need to learn to read. Doesn't
Absolutely.
That happen in quiet spaces? Or?
And there will be quiet spaces mm-hmm. that are available. And it's also a curriculum that is online, and so we anticipate much of the learning will also happen in private spaces in their homes and with their families. And it'll be a true partnership between families and students. As we're talking with elementary families, we're telling the parents there is a commitment for their involvement in the learning process. Otherwise, this will not be a successful endeavor for their family and for their student.
So is this what we call the blended learning model?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yeah.
And how much of how many teachers then do you actually have? I mean, for the 33 K through 5, that's at least a classroom, yeah?
Definitely, yeah. And our administrator is special ed endorsed and has also taught and will be heavily involved in the teaching as well as administering that portion. And then as the student demand warrants, there will be teachers that will be hired and paraprofessionals.
Yeah, so for those 92 kids, how many teachers do we have?
Well, we're doing some sharing. Mm-hmm. And so with the high school area, they'll be able to be teaching at the high school some classes, and then they will also teach their discipline at the academy.
Oh, I see. So they'll commute, huh?
Yeah, back and forth between the two.
All right. And do these kids show up every day or not necessarily?
It's time and place choice. We are recommending that they participate. They can come every day and they can spend all day there, or they can choose to come every other day. We will be monitoring their progress very closely, and those students that aren't making satisfactory progress will need to report in and will need to be working more closely with the teachers. Those that are making progress, and if they're choosing not to participate as actively, that is okay.
So they're exempt from the 180-day school schedule?
Right.
So is this considered a charter school?
It is not. It's a district school. And the district has autonomy to make policies to allow for blended learning type of experiences. Because learning is still happening. They are just not doing it in the classroom.
All right. Is it too late for people to be part of that?
No. In fact, this Thursday we have a parent information session. It will be at 10 o'clock a.m. and 7 o'clock p.m. at the district office in Camas. And we encourage people that are interested and see this as a viable option to please come and learn more.
So from somebody within the Park City School District, would they be allowed in?
They can, school choice. Again, it's the primary purpose was to accommodate education for residents that will be living in the Silver Creek area. But Utah law allows that if there is space in the facility, people can, school choice.
How many will you be able to take?
You know, we are getting very close to the capacity for this year. And again, depending on the growth in the Silver Creek area, that will determine how many others that we can bring in
okay.
in the future.
All right. Anything else you guys want to mention?
Nope. I don't believe
okay.
so.
Chet Sorensen and Kim Begman, thanks for your time this morning.